Practical Applications of the ADA Amendments Act conference call. Your host for today is Mr. Steve Neeson. Mr. Neeson, you may begin.
Thank you very much. Good evening, everyone. As the operator said, this is Steve Neeson, and I'm with the National Capital Chapter of the National MS Society in Washington, D.C. I do want to welcome everyone to the third call in our 2010 Employment Teleconference Series, Practical Applications of the ADA Amendments. We would like to thank EMD Serona for their sponsorship of this program, and the New York City Southern New York Chapter would also like to thank their Associates Committee for their sponsorship as well. Joining me as your hosts on this evening's calls are Barbara McKeon, who's the Director of Employment Programs and Services with the New York City Southern New York Chapter, as well as Christina Forrester, who's the Employment Services Manager for the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter. The National MS Society is proud to be a source of information about MS, and our comments are based on professional advice, published information, and expert opinion, but do not represent therapeutic recommendations or prescription. For specific information and advice, please consult your qualified physician. And also be aware that this evening's call will be taped and will be available to you at the end of the series if you would like. This evening's call topic, we feel, is extremely important. As many people might know, the Americans with Disabilities Act is one of the key pieces of legislation designed to prevent discrimination, or designed to prevent against discrimination of people with disabilities within a variety of different settings, to include the employment arena. Part of the ADA does allow people the opportunity to request accommodations and deals with disclosure issues, two very important issues to the members that we serve. There are some proposed amendments to this law that could have direct impact on people that are living and working with MS, as well as some other similar types of conditions, and that's going to be the focus for the call tonight. Once our speaker has completed her presentation, there will be time for your questions. If you do have questions, please feel free to jot them down during the call so you're prepared to ask them during our Q&A period. Be sure to ask your question completely, because we will be muting your line after your question is posed. This will then allow us to get to as many questions as possible. We'll do our best to get to all the questions, but if time does run out, Barbara, Christina, and I will give you all of our contact information so you can pose your questions to us, and we'll do our best to get the answer. At the conclusion of the call, there will be a polling that we will be polling the audience in an effort to evaluate the program. This is a short survey of only 6 questions, so if possible, please do stay on the line until the conclusion of the program. Provide us the answers to your questions. We are always definitely interested in your feedback. So, that being said, to do the introductions for our speaker tonight, our speaker for tonight's call is Marion Vessels. Marion is the director of the Disability and Business Technical Assistance Center, also known as the DIBTACS, the Mid-Atlantic ADA Center. She has been in this position since 1996. Within this role, she is responsible for the daily operation of the center, and she provides disability awareness training and seminars on the Americans with Disabilities Act, covering such issues as current legislation and employment. Previously, Ms. Vessels was the executive director of the Maryland Governor's Committee on Employment of People with Disabilities. She also worked as the director of the Maryland Governor's Office for Individuals with Disabilities and was an executive board member for the President's Committee on Employment of People with disabilities, so she's extremely well qualified to talk about these topics that we're going to be covering today. Marion, I'll turn the floor over to you.
Thank you. Well, welcome. I'm very excited to be able to have the opportunity to present this information. I think that, as Steve said, it is very timely, and it may be some information that may be new to you, so I hope that this will give you an opportunity for some information tonight that will enhance your ability to receive accommodation, understand new legislation that was passed a year ago, and what the status of it is, and we'll then talk about some reasonable accommodation processes, examples of reasonable accommodation, and review the information we talked about tonight. You were all sent the PowerPoint presentation, so I hope you have that in front of you. If not, I will be summarizing the information on each of the slides so that you can just listen and participate if you choose to. The first thing we want to talk about is, in case you're not up on current legislation, is a refresher. What is the ADA Amendments Act? You'll see it often referred to as ADA-AA, or I've heard it referred to as ADA-AW, which I think is horrible. It sounds like going to the dentist. So we're going to refer to it as the ADA-AA, the ADA Amendments Act. Its overall purpose was to restore the intent and protections of the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990. When the ADA was passed by Congress, Congress fully intended that most people with severe disabilities would be covered. We found that that wasn't actually the case after a series of Supreme Court decisions that made it more difficult for people with disabilities to be covered under the law. And we were very concerned about that as implementers of the law. So we spent a lot of time as a Center for Education on the Americans with Disabilities Act working with folks and trying to discuss what the law does and doesn't cover. You will see as we discuss, this Amendments Act went back to the original intent of the law to make sure that people with disabilities were covered in certain activities. And then it went further to define what a disability is, and that truly benefits folks with MS to a huge degree that had never been done before. So this is a really exciting piece of legislation. The law was signed on September 25th, 2008, and it became effective January 1st, 2009. Now, many of you know that a law is really only a law when it gets its real regulations, because the law really gives you the framework. And that's what we have now, the framework. Employers must comply with this framework, but they really don't have the meat of the law until regulations are passed. Regulations have been in a holding pattern for the last year and a half. The Bush administration tried to get them out the door before they left Washington, D.C., and were not able to do so. As a standard practice, when the Obama administration came, they put a halt on all regulations before they were put out the door because they wanted to review them. They have to be then, once they're reviewed by the administration, they have to be passed by the EEOC, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. The EEOC has five members. With the new administration, three members resigned or took other positions, which left two, and you need three or a quorum to pass new regulations. So up until now, they have not had a quorum to pass these regulations, which is very problematic because we'd like to get these regulations into the public arena. The Obama administration had put forward three recommendations for the three empty positions for the EEOC. The Congress has been in a battle about passing on these three recommendations, and so we were not able to get these voted on. Last weekend, President Obama did what is called a recess appointment while Congress was on vacation for the Easter and spring holiday. He has the right to be able to make appointments for positions that need to be filled. And these can be filled for a period of no more than a year until Congress gets around to voting on them. So three appointments were made, and we now have a full EEOC commission. The process now will be that the EEOC commission will review these regulations. and then send them on to OMB, the Office of Management and Budget, who will then have 90 days to review them and pass them out. When those regulations go to OMB, we will have what we call a final proposed regulation, final being that it voted out of the EEOC Commission. At that point, we presume that there will be little, if no, changes. So at that point, we will begin doing training on the final regulations. We felt this was a probably good time to do this training, even though we don't have the regulations, because we really have no idea when the regulations will become absolutely final. And we feel this is really vital information for you to know about, because the law has been passed. So with that, I want to move forward into talking about what the definition of a disability is. Definition in the next slide is: an individual with a disability is one who has a record of or is regarded as having a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits a major life activity. Has is pretty easy. You all probably have been diagnosed or work with folks who have been diagnosed with MS. So that is having a disability. You might have, like I have experienced, I have a spinal cord injury and use a power wheelchair, but I also had breast cancer. My breast cancer was 13 years ago, so I no longer have breast cancer, but I have a record of having breast cancer, if you look at my medical records. So many people might have a record of other disabilities and might need protection under the law. And there may be people who are regarded as having disability by family or association, or by having characteristics of a disability without actually having one. The rest of that definition says a physical or mental impairment that substantially limits a major life activity. So when the ADA was first passed, people were saying, oh, people with hangnails are going to be covered under the law. Clearly not so, because it has to substantially limit a major life activity. For many of you, your symptoms are going to be varied, but you're probably going to have, unless you're in remission, some major life activity that will be affected. It might be, as you'll see later on, things like concentration, walking, moving, seeing, a variety, bowel and bladder, all kinds of things. So you more than likely will be considered a person with a disability because of your definition of having a disability. The new definition of disability is that now we need not look at definition being as strict as it had been in the past. I mentioned the Supreme Court decisions really narrowed the definition of disability and who'd be covered. Now the definition of disability is one that need not prevent significantly or severely restrict the performance of a major life activity. So this is really, really good news, because it used to be, after the Supreme Court decisions, that you had to be so impacted by not only one job, but by a whole classification. And then further decisions from the Supreme Court, the Toyota decision, made it so that it wasn't even just work-related, but in your activities of daily living at home. If you could do a lot of activities at home, you couldn't possibly be limited. So it really eliminated a ton of people who thought they had a disability, and by most definitions would have been, but we're not anywhere covered now under the ADA. So now the disability provisions on the ADA Amendments Act says you shall be construed in favor of broad coverage and should not require extensive analysis. So if you say that you have multiple sclerosis to your boss, they're not going to need to do extensive analysis of whether you are covered under the ADA, because the new ADA Amendments Act says you don't have to go to great lengths to determine whether this person has a disability or not, which is good news, because you may still be asked for documentation of a disability, especially if you don't look and you don't have any really obvious symptomatology. But if you're in a power wheelchair and you say, I have limitations in these areas, you know, they're not going to probably need extensive documentation, nor should they under the ADA Amendments Act. We talked about major life activities in the definition of disability. In the next slide, we're talking about things that the average person in the general population can perform with little or no difficulty. And that is things like caring for oneself, performing manual tasks, seeing, hearing, eating, sleeping, walking, standing, lifting, bending. Now, many of these were existing. Bending is a brand new one. On the next slide, thinking, communicating, sitting, reaching, interacting with others, working, breathing, learning, reading, concentrating, speaking. All of those are now defined as major life activities. Now, that list is not comprehensive, but it's designed to give you a good range of what activities of daily living are. Now, if those of you with MS look at that list, you can probably identify many more than one or two that might be affecting you in your ability to perform major life activities. You might have problems sleeping or seeing or standing for long periods of time or performing manual tasks or interacting with others with concentration. You may have depression, all other kinds of things that may be impacting your ability to do typical activities of daily living. Now, under the ADA Amendments Act, we also have an expansion which includes major bodily functions, and that's on your next slide. Now, you can tell I'm really an ADA geek because I'm really excited about this provision of the law. Because what it does is it looks at not only basic activities, as we've discussed, but other things involving the body. So we're looking at the immune system. We're looking at normal cell growth, digestion, bowel and bladder, brain function, circulatory function, cardiovascular systems, and neurological functions. Many or all of these might be compromised with someone with MS. We're also looking at things like respiratory, endocrine, hemic, which is blood, lymphatic, musculoskeletal, special sense and organ and skin, genitourinary and reproductive functions. Again, many of you have maybe one or more of these that are affected by your MS, and that would impact on your ability to perform major activities of daily living. The new standard, and again, this is really fabulous for folks with MS, and you'll see in the third listing on this next slide, it covers episodic disabilities. Under the revised definition of disability that was amended with Supreme Court decisions, we originally looked at people that did not have implementation of, you looked at somebody and you looked at them without mitigating measures, and you looked at them, if they were in remission, they weren't covered as a person with a disability because they had no effect of a disability. Now we're back to the original standard under the Americans with Disabilities Act, which says that episodic disabilities are covered. And the law specifically mentions epilepsy, hypertension, multiple sclerosis, asthma, diabetes, major depression, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, and cancer. So all of these and others, again, these are not comprehensive lists, should be considered a disability, even in remission, if when active would be substantially limiting. So this is really key. So if you happen to be in remission, you're still going to be eligible to receive reasonable accommodations. And it might be that if you're in remission, you're still going to be very sensitive to heat and cold. And so you might want to flex schedule during the summertime and come in early so that you leave before the heat of the day. Or in the wintertime, you may want to delay start with a flex schedule so that you're not coming in the very frigid part of the morning. Now, even in remission, you can ask for reasonable accommodations because the new standard says, even in remission, we consider you, if it was fully active, that you would be substantially limiting. So this is really important for you to understand and appreciate in being able to ask for reasonable accommodations. Also with things like fatigue, you may want to take additional breaks and extend your working day to give you the ability to continue working with frequent breaks or frequent movement. On the next slide, we're looking at mitigating measures. And what is that? What does that mean? A mitigating measure is any device, measure, or medication that reduces the effect of the disability. So many of you may be on medication, and that reduces the effect of your MS. So if you weren't on that medication, what would your MS be like? What would your activities of daily life be impacted? So we look at people with their mitigating measure. Without their mitigating measure. I'm going back to the old definition. Sometimes old habits are hard to break. You look at them without their mitigating measure. And if they would be disabled, they're now considered disabled under the law. So we're looking at the next slide, positive effects of mitigating measures, except for ordinary eyeglasses and contact lenses, are ignored when determining whether an impairment is substantially limiting. We don't have eyeglasses and contact lenses included because, as my ophthalmologist told me, if you're over 40, get used to it, you're going to wear glasses. So that being said, we don't want to conclude people with just ordinary eyeglasses and contact lenses as people with disabilities. People with severe vision impairment would still be covered because they probably aren't getting back to 20/20, but it may mitigate their vision impairment to some degree. All right, we want to talk now about how the law really plays out, the ADA amendments plays out in everyday situations. So we need to look at you as a person with a disability in an employment setting. And we're going to look at a qualified individual with a disability. On this next slide, it talks about the person who satisfies the requisite skill, experience, education, and other job-related requirements of the position the individual holds or desires to hold. So we want to look first at, are you qualified to do the position you're looking for, that you're, you know, applying for? And that means you must meet all the standards. I once had somebody who called into our center and said, you know, I should be able to do whatever I want because I have a disability. It's like, no. You, just because you have a disability doesn't mean you're given carte blanche. You have to be able to do the job. And even if it means that due to your disability, you're no longer qualified to do the job, and we can't find a reasonable accommodation for you, then you may not be qualified to do that job anymore, and you may have to look for a different job. So you must be qualified with the requisite experience and background, the education, any certificates or diplomas or other experience that's needed to be able to do the job. In the next slide, we talk about you must be able to do that job with or without reasonable accommodations. You must be able to perform the essential functions of the job. Almost all good job descriptions will have what the essential functions are. And it will say you must be able to implement these three activities within a certain time frame. You must be able to do whatever it is. Those are going to be the essential functions. It won't be things like making coffee for the office, unless, of course, you happen to work at Starbucks, and then that might be an essential function. Even for somebody who's just the manager and doesn't, you know, isn't a barista, but would need to back somebody up if they didn't show up. So you have to look at the position, determine the essential functions of the job, and then determine if you are still qualified to do the job. Now, we want to look at what these accommodations are. On the next slide, we're looking at workplace accommodations. Workplace accommodations are any changes in the work setting that enable qualified workers to accomplish their tasks. So those changes can be varied. It could be a flex schedule, and we'll talk about a lot of these later, but it could be a variety of things. So you need to be creative. You need to expand your horizons and think about what kind of accommodations might be helpful for you to allow you to continue doing your job. And, of course, with MS, it may change literally and sometimes from day to day or week to week what kind of accommodations you might need. But you need to think about that and very proactively to understand what your limitations might be and your need to be able to be accommodated to be able to continue functioning in your highest capacity. The next slide talks about the scope of reasonable accommodations. And the scope of reasonable accommodations we're going to look at are three different things. Modified job application process. So let's say you might have vision impairment. You've got blurry vision, et cetera. And you might be helpful if they gave you materials in large print. Well, what your obligation would be to decide what size large print. Technically, that's usually 18 point or bigger. But you might say, you know, I really need all the materials that you need me to look at. I need them in 20 point because that makes it easier for me to see. So you may need the forms to fill out in 20 point or have them sent to you an email so that you can enlarge them on your screen and be able to fill them out and send them in. The second standard is to modify the work environment or the manner which it's customarily performed. So that may mean, you know, we'll talk a lot about the physical structure. You may need a modified desk to get a wheelchair under the desk. You might need to make sure there are grab bars in the toilet stall. And you might not want the full accessible stall, but maybe even just a standard stall if you're ambulatory, but you need grab bars on the side to be able to assist you getting up and down. It could be a number of different things, flex schedule, et cetera. And then also, let's say you're using a chair. The third standard talks about enabling an employee with a disability to enjoy equal benefits and privileges of employment. What are those? Those are things like the health club. You may get a membership to a gym. And if you're a wheelchair user, they need to make sure that that gym is fully accessible to you. A lunchroom, maybe on the second floor. If there's no elevator, they need to make sure that you have the ability to join your coworkers up on the second floor. And so they'll have to move the lunchroom or make other changes so that you can enjoy the benefits of employment, which would be having lunch with coworkers like everyone else. Now, accommodations in our next slide talk about the way that they're looked at. So you look at what are the specific requirements of the job? Again, going back to those essential functions. What are your particular needs as an employee or applicant? And the extent to which those modifications are available without causing an undue hardship on your employer. So it's incumbent on you to know what the job requirements are. And to know then what your particular needs are. Now, we don't expect you to know all of the requirements and all the accommodations that might be available to you. There may be wonderful assistive technologies and a variety of other things. And technology is changing on a daily basis. You know, now we've got, everyone's got cell phones that they can text on so that you're not having to carry around a large computer to get some information that you would need to go to a meeting on. Lots and lots of different things that we didn't envision 5, 10 years ago, even 2, 3 years ago, in some cases a couple months ago. So there's lots of resources, and we'll review those at the end to assist you in determining what kind of accommodations you might need. Some of the examples of reasonable accommodation would be, as was mentioned, modifying existing facilities. So you might have an accessible bathroom. You might want to make sure that they have additional accessible parking, maybe one with your name on it, so that you wouldn't have to walk long distances. And it might not mean that you need a fully accessible space, but just a space close to the front entrance that would have your name on it that would be designated for you to keep you from having to walk long distances. It might mean relocating your office if you're in an area that gets a lot of heat and that's not good for your condition and they can't really cool it down, then they may want to move you to another position, another place. Or they may want to make sure that they've got separate cooling and vent and heating systems in an area that makes it accessible for you. You might want to look at job restructuring. It might be that the job you have requires a lot of moving around, and that's just not something you're able to do anymore. So they may want to restructure your position so that you're doing less of that, and you're going to share those responsibilities with someone else, and you'll take on some of their more sedentary responsibilities. Or it might be that you can no longer work full-time, but you can request and work with HR to see and your supervisor to see if maybe part-time or modified work schedule would work for you. So maybe only working 6 hours a day because of fatigue issues. It might be modified work schedule, flex schedule, so that we can look at, you know, we talked about earlier about coming to work later in the day during the winter and earlier in the day during the summer. We might want to look at taking more breaks. So we would flex your schedule so that you would work, you know, you'd be in the office, you know, if a typical work day is eight hours, you might work actually 9 hours but take more breaks, take four more 15-minute breaks to allow you the chance to relax and gather your strength back up. It might mean that we're going to look at enhanced computer screens or listening systems, et cetera. We might have other vision accommodations that might be needed to be made. All of those would be considered examples of reasonable accommodation. You might need to have a modification of policies. If they say that you can't drink any fluids on the job, at your desk, you might need to because of the medication you're taking, et cetera. And so you could work it out with them that either you're allowed to have fluids on your desk in a certain container so that it won't spill or destroy sensitive equipment, or take more frequent little fluid breaks. Or you might want to, might need more, with bladder issues, you might need to go to the toilet more often, and so that you might need those adaptations of policies to allow you more frequent, as a colleague of mine calls them, bio breaks. Providing assistive technology, all different kinds of wonderful technologies available out there, enhanced screens, enhanced technology screens that will talk to you if you have more vision problems, all kinds of things. Now, the very last accommodation would be reassigning you to a vacant position if you're no longer able to do your current position. And that might mean, you know, a demotion if you're no longer able to do the current position, but you could do something that's less demanding for you. Then they would have to look at a vacant position that you could that you were qualified to do that you could do with your limitations of your disability. Now, to review some of the things that we've talked about, the new regulations are especially beneficial for folks with MS. We looked at all those bodily functions that will definitely, I think, make a huge difference on folks with MS, because you're going to be looking, if you want to look back, or I will remind you some of the things of what bodily functions were. Musculoskeletal, so if you're having weakness, you're not able to stand for long periods of time, you need to use a walker, you need to not walk long distances, you need to use a wheelchair. We're also looking at bowel and bladder. If you have bowel and bladder problems, all of those are going to be affected by bodily functions, the new standard under the Americans with Disabilities Act Amendments Act. The less rigorous definition of disability. So you're not going to have to show as much documentation for the kind of modifications you're going to need to provide reasonable accommodation for you. And again, this is going to be looking at the kind of needs that you will need to make to allow you to continue to work. And probably the most exciting one is that episodic or those in remission are now covered. This is fabulous news for you, because if you're in remission, you're still going to be eligible for having accommodations that will keep you in remission, that will lower your fatigue or the potential thereof, that will keep you able to work on the job and postpone the potential of having your condition become active. So this is really, really exciting news for folks with MS in particular. Practical applications, things that you can do after this teleconference, is when the new ADA regulations become final, or even, as I said, when we have the proposed final regulations, hopefully within maybe the next month or so, make sure you're very aware of them. There will be lots of documents, and I'm sure Steve and the folks at the MS Society will share those with you, and there will be lots of fact sheets that you'll be able to find on our website that will lay out for you what the final accommodations are, the final regulations are. Be proactive. Determine the accommodations that you will need. Do some homework. Find out what will assist you. You were sent some documents in preparation for this teleconference. A wonderful resource for you is the Job Accommodation Network, or JAN, which is a fabulous resource that's been around for over 20 years that helps people determine what kind of accommodations might be needed. So we sent you a document that was put out by the Job Accommodation Network. We also sent you another good resource that was developed by Cornell University that also defines what some of the accommodation processes are for folks with multiple sclerosis. Lastly, disclose only what you need to tell someone. You don't have to go through all of the problems you might have in activities of daily living if it's not going to impact on the essential functions of your job. So only disclose what is necessary to get the accommodation that you need. You can further disclose if necessary later. And if you have a question, call. You've got great resources with the MS Society, and you have great resources with centers like mine. As Steve said, we're called the DBTACs, the Disability and Business Technical Assistance Centers, which I know doesn't mean anything to you. It's a pretty bad name that Congress came up with. So we really call ourselves the ADA Centers. My center is one of 10 in the country, and we provide information, guidance, materials. We have newsletters and e-bulletins. We provide trainings both in person, online, and teleconferences like we're doing tonight. And we're regional. so that folks in the Mid-Atlantic area can call my center. But those of you in New York or further up in Boston can call your centers as well. We have one central number, 1-800-949-4232. And that will direct you to the center in your region that handles your area. The great thing about us is that we are regional, so we know our regional resources, and we can get to you to something in your neighborhood or in your state that might be of assistance to you. We're federally funded by the Department of Education. We don't advocate for people with disabilities. We inform. So with that, I think I am going to turn it over so that we can get into some questions.
Thank you so much. This is wonderful. Alma, if we want to see if there's any questions from our listeners right now, that would be great.
Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Again, if you have a question, please press the number one key on your phone. Our first question comes from Anne. Go ahead, Anne. Anne, please go ahead with your question. Our first question comes from Kathy. Go ahead, Kathy.
Hi. Thank you so much for your presentation. This was wonderful. I have several questions sort of related. The first is on the bottom of page 7, so I don't know which slide number that is the slide that says a qualified individual with a disability means one who satisfies the requisite skill, with or without reasonable accommodation can perform the essential functions of such position.
Okay.
With or without reasonable, meaning if a reasonable accommodation is necessary, they're still able to perform the essential functions, as opposed to, because without, you may not be able to perform the essential functions, but with, you can.
Right, and sometimes, you know, depending, you know, if you're in remission, you might need not need any accommodations at all. And it may be that you choose not to take advantage of the accommodation. And then at some other point, you might need it. So it is with or without. It's in a state of flux for you, depending on if you need it or not. But you don't need to take an accommodation if you do not need it. Does that help? Okay.
Our next question comes from Raymond. Go ahead, Raymond.
I'm saying, I just want to know what kind of job I could, I'm saying, supposed to do, because I have problems with walking. I use a walker. My balance. I want to know what kind of job I'll be able to do since it's out there for me.
Well,
probably. Oh, I'm sorry. I was just gonna pipe up and say, Raymond, probably one of the best things to do would be for you to call your local chapter, because they might be able to refer you to some resources like your state vocational rehabilitation agency that might be able to do some specialized assessments with you to determine what types of work would be appropriate for you given your experience, but also your symptoms. So depending on what chapter that you're calling from, you can just call our toll-free number, 1-800-344-4867, and that will then automatically connect you to your local chapter. Are we still there?
Our next question comes from Mary. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi. My question is not unlike what Raymond just asked. I call it a shaky paw. It's really bad. It's an intention tremor, and as soon as I try to write something, I wouldn't even be able to fill out an application. I'm a former photographer. Well, you know what that did to my ability to continue. So it was basically the same question that Raymond was asking, so I guess I need to be in touch with that greater near Delaware Valley, perhaps they could put me on to something that I would be able to accomplish.
Absolutely. And the other thing you might want to do is talk to the Job Accommodation Network or your assistive technology project that would be able to assist you in finding out technologies or strategies that would be able to assist you, even with your tremor, to be able to fill out applications and do other things. So that you may want to look at technologies while you're exploring the opportunities that may exist for you with your Office of Vocational Rehabilitation.
Our next question comes from Jennifer. Go ahead, Jennifer.
Yeah, I haven't put a tremendous amount of thought into it, but the first major accommodation I can think that would be really handy for me would be to have a day off in the middle of the week. It wears me out to be out and about all day. Is that a reasonable accommodation to say, like, I can work from home Wednesdays?
It's certainly worth asking for. And now we're seeing more and more people being encouraged to do telecommuting. The federal government has aggressive programs, and many states are encouraging that as well. But it really depends on the essential function of the job. Can you perform the essential functions of the job? An example I would give is if my office manager said that she wanted to work from home one day a week, I would say no, because the essential function of her job is to be available on site to support all my other team members. But for me as the director, I work from home one day a week so that I'm not commuting and able to get more done. So depending on the essential functions, It certainly is worth exploring and seeing if that's something that could be done, that maybe your job can be modified so that all the kind of things that could be done at home could be compacted into Wednesday.
Do we have any more questions, Alma?
Our next question comes from Kathy. Kathy, go ahead.
Hi. So my question is pain, chronic pain, considered a disability within the new definition?
Well, chronic pain would certainly affect the essential functions of being able to perform a job. And it'll affect your ability to do activities of daily living because it may affect your concentration. It may affect your ability to do a variety of things. So you're not going to look just at having constant pain, but how does it affect you? Some people with medication are able to do really well even though they're in, constant pain because the medication is able to ameliorate the pain. But they may have side effects from the medication. The medication may make them drowsy, so they're still not able to maybe drive or maybe not able to concentrate. So you really need to look at how it affects you. And it is either the pain itself or the medication or other strategies you use to compensate for the pain that you're in. But it would definitely be looked at as if it affects your ability to perform a major life activity, then I would definitely say you would be considered potentially, depending on how severe it is.
Our next question comes from Corrine. Go ahead, Corrine.
Okay, hi, thanks. Going back to about two questions ago, as far as the working at home, and in my company, their policy is that everybody eventually is going to be remote. That hasn't happened yet, and I work in a health clinical setting, I'm not a nurse, but I assist the nurses, and all the nurses there are sending home, have sent most of them home already. So I asked for an ADA accommodation if I could work at home a couple days a week, which is perfectly reasonable since it's being done anyway. And they said yes. So they dictated to me, literally, that I could only work at home on Tuesday or Thursday because I had enough time in between to recover from my fatigue, which is my major issue. So I was about to ask them if I could, or get a note from my neurologist, if I could make it like another day a week, 3 days a week at home, which would really help me. But they seem to be unreasonable about this. What is your take on this?
Well, one of the things that I would do, since you sounds like you have asked and they've said yes, and they're kind of determining what it is would be effective for you, I would want to then go back to your neurologist and ask for documentation as to why the accommodation that you're requesting would be more effective for you, because an accommodation really needs to be effective. And so if 2 days a week is not effective but three would be, then I'd want to show documentation about why that might be effective and go back and show them the documentation and ask them to reconsider their decision to only allow you 2 days a week and not the third day that you're asking for. So this is where documentation would be very helpful, to be able to ask for the extension of an additional day working at home.
There are no more questions in queue.
Great. Barbara, do you have any questions or anything else that you wanted to contribute before we kind of close up the call this evening?
I think Marion was pretty comprehensive, so I don't really have anything to add. We might just want to give out our contact information.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Why don't we we'll give out all of our contact information. So, Barbara, I'll actually start with you.
Okay. If anyone in my area would like to call me, my number is 212-453-3218. My email is B as in Barbara, M as in Mary, C, K, E, O, N as in Nancy, at msnyc.org.
Great. Christina, were you able to log back on? I heard from Christina that her call got dropped. If not, I'll give her contact. I don't hear her piping up. Christina Forster with the Greater Delaware Valley Chapter, her number is 215-271-1500. Email is Christina with a C-H, so Christina.Forster, F-O-R-S-T-E-R, at P-A-E. Dot NMSS for National Multiple Sclerosis Society .org. And my contact information is 202-296-5363. And my email address is S Nissen, N as in Nancy, I-S-S-E-N, at MSANDYOU, it's MSANDYOU .org. If you do think of any further questions, you know, following the call or after looking over the slides or the materials that we sent, feel free to get in touch with one of the three of us if you're not from our specific chapters, and then we'll do our best to either try to get the answer to you and or try to connect you to someone at your local chapter. So just one kind of quick plug, and then I'll thank our speaker again. Don't forget, we still have three more calls to go within the series. Next week, our topic is resources for training and placing older workers. April 15th, considerations for career changers. And on the 22nd, starting a business with the right supports, it may be easier than you think. So there's still time to sign up for any of those calls. If you do want to register, either go to your local chapter's website, register that way, or feel free to call your local chapter or call the National Mental Society. Again, our toll-free number is 1-800-344-4867, and we'd be more than happy to get you signed up. Marian, I want to thank you so much for sharing all that you did tonight. I was busily jotting down some notes myself here tonight, too. So thank you very much for being a part and for sharing all of your experience and the knowledge that you have on the subject.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
So, and if everybody could just stay on the line, we do have six brief questions to pose for our polling, and thanks so much for joining us. Okay, Emma, we're ready for the polling.
Ladies and gentlemen, this begins our polling session. Our first question, are you currently working? Press 1 for yes, press 2 for no. Question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question. How would you rate the speakers? Press 1 for excellent, press 2 for good, press 3 for fair, press 4 for poor. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, how would you rate the content of the program? Press 1 for excellent, press 2 for good, press 3 for fair, press 4 for poor. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question. As a result of this teleconference, I have a better understanding of the definition of disability under the ADA. Press 1 for strongly agree. Press 2 for agree. Press 3. Agree somewhat. Press 4 for disagree. Press 5 for strongly disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our next question, as a result of this teleconference, I can provide examples of reasonable accommodations. Press 1 for strongly agree, press 2 for agree, press 3, agree somewhat, press 4 for disagree, press 5, strongly disagree. The poll is now closed for this question. Please hold while we prepare our next question. Our final question. As a result of this teleconference, I gained clarification into how the new ADA regulations can be beneficial to people with MS. Press 1 for strongly agree. Press 2 for agree. Press 3. Agree somewhat. Press 4, disagree. Press 5 for strongly disagree.